Okay, great. Thank you very much for coming. We now merit to begin today Masechet Makot. Masechet Makot, the word Makos means blows, lashes, because Masechet Makot has three topics. The first topic actually is Edim Zomamim, the way to flip witnesses, to disprove them and to cause them to get what they were trying to do to others. Then there's the topic of the person who kills by mistake, who goes into the city of refuge. That's called Elu Hein HaGolim, the second chapter. And the third chapter is Elu Hein HaLokin. These are those who get lashes, so it deals with lashes. That's why the tractate is called Tractate Makos, the tractate about lashes. And as we'll see, this tractate, this Masechet, continues really the themes of Masechet Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin means the high court. So Masechet Sanhedrin deals with what the punishments the court will mete out. And Makot, this chapter, is talking about the levels of standards of evidence in a court. We know that in halacha and Jewish law, evidence is established by two witnesses, al pi shnei edim yakum davar. Now, doesn't mean any two people who come automatically we believe what they have to say. There's got to be some degree of risk for them as well. So that's the idea of Edim Zomim. If two other witnesses come and they say about the first group of two witnesses, you are lying. What's the proof that you're lying? You claim that on Monday, the 4th of November at 10 o'clock in the morning, you were in Englewood and you saw Reuven steal money from Shimon, but at Monday at November 4th at 10 o'clock in the morning, you were with us in California. You were with us in Australia. So the witnesses testify that the first group of witnesses were somewhere else and at another place at that time. And by testifying that they were at another place at that time, they get accepted. The first set are liars, and the Torah says, "Vasisim lo," due to the first set, "Kasher zaman lasos lachiv," whatever he was plotting to do to his friend. So he was testifying falsely that his friend stole money, trying to make his friend have to pay. So now he has to pay that amount of money. Whatever he was trying to do to his friend, that's what will be done to him. That's what the Torah says. So let's begin the first Mishnah. The nature of this Mishnah is like many Mishnayos and Shas, it begins in the middle of the story. So instead of saying first, there's such a thing as a court, and a court needs two witnesses, but two witnesses could be disproven if two other witnesses come and say, you were with us at this time, and you do to the first set what they were plotting to do. The Mishnah starts off by saying, Ketzad ha'edim na'asim zomim. How do witnesses get made into Edim Zomim, the plotting witnesses, the false witnesses? So it doesn't start by telling us what is an Ed Zomim, or that there's such a thing as testimony. It starts right away with, how do witnesses become Edim Zomim? And then the Mishnah goes on to seemingly not even talk about that. The Mishnah says, the following case, Me'idim anu be'ish ploni shu ben grusho ben chalutza. Let's say the two witnesses come, and they say, you know, we testify that this person, Reuven, is the son of, he's a Kohen, but his father married a divorced woman. Or his father married a woman who had gotten the service, who had served chalitza on her brother-in-law. Now, a Kohen's not allowed to marry a woman who's divorced. A Kohen's not allowed to marry a woman who does chalitza. And the child of a Kohen with a divorced woman is called a halal. He doesn't have the status of a Kohen. So let's say the two witnesses come and they say, we know this person's father. We were there at the wedding. We saw the wedding. The wedding was a wedding of a Kohen with a divorced woman. We then saw this divorced woman become pregnant from this father. So we know this man is not really a Kohen. And then other witnesses come and say, you couldn't have possibly be saying the truth because those whole, you know, years that you claimed you saw this thing, you were with us in another country, in India. So, Ein Omrim, we don't say, Yasa Zeb ben Gusha ben Chalutza, that if this person testifying, the first set of witnesses were themselves Kohanim, that they should become the status of the child of a divorced woman or the child of a woman who had Chalitza, namely that they should become Chalalim. Tachtav, in place of the person that they were trying to make a halal. Elokarbaim. Rather, they get 40 lashes, really 39 lashes. Second example of such a concept. Midamanu b'ish ploni. If two witnesses come and say, we testify about Reuven, that when Reuven was climbing up a tree, he was chopping down branches, and then his axe slipped from his hand, it fell down, and it killed Shimon by mistake. So Reuven has to go to exile. And this happened on November 4th in Englewood at 10 o'clock in the morning. Shuchayev Legalus. He's obligated to run to exile to a city of refuge so he doesn't get killed by the nearest of kin. So that's what they testified. And then two other witnesses come and testify. I know at that time that you claimed you saw what you saw in that place. You couldn't have been at that place. You couldn't have seen that thing because you were with us somewhere else. So we accept the second set of witnesses. The first set of witnesses are thrown out. But ain't omrim yigla zetachtav. We don't say that the first set of witnesses, because they were trying to make someone run to exile, they have to run to exile. Elolok arbaim. But rather they get 40 lashes. So the Mishnah is saying...
Why do we always accept the second set of witnesses?
That's an amazing idea, right? Because as Roger says, it's two against two. So if the Torah says believe two, maybe the first two should be believed and not the second two.
Maybe the second two came first, and then the second. I mean, it's like.
Okay, so there are two classical approaches to that question. One classical approach is to say, as Fred said, the first set comes and says what they said, what they're claiming happened in front of their eyes in a certain place. The second set is coming and saying, you weren't there, you were with us, you were somewhere else. So this is the chiddush of the Torah. The Torah, you know, Hashem creates these rules. Hashem created this, you know, amazing new idea. The second set gets accepted to throw out the first set. The other idea that the classical approach is that the first set was talking about an event that they saw. The second set is talking about the witnesses themselves and where they were. So it's not a direct contradiction. If the first set would say, we saw Reuven steal, and the second set come in and say, no, we were with Reuven that whole morning, we didn't see him steal, he didn't steal, then we wouldn't accept the second set necessarily. It's two against two, we don't know anything. That would leave us in a state of doubt. But the second set here is not directly contradicting the first set. They are, by indirectly contradicting the first set. They're placing them elsewhere. They're believed about that. Once they're believed about that, that means that the first set is a bunch of liars.
The second set is not talking about the actual action. It's talking about the witnesses.
Right, it's talking about where the witnesses were, at what time, with us. So they're believed about that. Once they're believed about that, then it turns out that the first set's statements about the victim of their plots are not credible, and therefore it should be done to them what they were plotting to do to their friend, with apparently the exceptions of if they were planning to make their friend a non-Kohen, or if they're planning to make their friend go into exile, then it's not done to them what they were trying to do to their friend. Rather, they get lashes. So now the Gemara asks a bunch of questions on this Mishnah. Again, the Mishnah starts off with a question saying, how do witnesses become Eidim Zomimim? Plotting witnesses. One second, ask the Gemara. Really, this Mishnah is Ketzad Ein Eidim Nasim Zomim Boile. This Mishnah's point is, how do you have a situation where the second set of witnesses are accepted, and the first set are not treated like Zomimim? They're rejected, they get lashes, but they're not treated the way Zomimim are treated, because the Zomimim, it's done to them what they were trying to do against their friend. And here, it's not done to them. So that's question number one. It should be, Ketzad, how, Eina Edom Noasim Zomimim? How are witnesses not made into Zomimim? V'od, and secondly, Midakatani L'kaman, there's going to be a Mishnah later that says, Avol Amar Lahem, but if the second set, say to the first set, hey, Yechatamidim, how could you testify that you saw Reuven on November 4th at 10 o'clock in the morning in Englewood steal from Shimon? Because on that very day, November 4th, Atim, you, you were with us in California, you were with us in India at that time in the morning. So then, the first set are considered false witnesses. So then, that means that our Mishnah, which isn't talking about that case, doesn't say those exact words, is actually talking about witnesses that are not considered Edim Zomim, but they are rejected witnesses. So the Gemara answers both questions. Tana, our Mishnah is really a continuation of a Mishnah in Masechet Sanhedrin. Hasamkai, it's referring to the Mishnah in Masechet Sanhedrin. Masechet Sanhedrin, in each chapter, towards the end, talks about different death penalties and who gets these death penalties. So it starts off by talking about who gets the death penalty of stoning. And then it talks about who gets the death penalty of being burned. And who gets the death penalty of beheading. And who gets the death penalty of being choked to death. So it's said over there, normally, kol azomimin, normally false witnesses, makdimin l'osa misa. They get the death that they were trying to impose on the victim of their plot. So let's say two witnesses come in and they say, Reuven worshipped idols in front of us, and we warned him he worshipped idols, and then two other witnesses come and say, no, you can't be, because at that time you were with us somewhere else. So these two witnesses get stoned, because that's what they were trying to cause Reuven to get. So then the Mishnah said there's an exception to this. Chutz mizomame bas koinu ba'ala, except for false witnesses who say the following. The false witnesses say that this, a certain lady who is a daughter of a Kohen, and she was married, she was disloyal to her husband, she had an affair, and it's a very severe prohibition for a married woman to have an affair, and it's even more severe if she has an added holiness, she's the daughter of a Kohen. How dare a daughter of a Kohen who's married go have an affair? So the Torah says that if the daughter of a Kohen who's married has an affair, instead of the normal punishment of a married woman who has an affair, which is death by choking, this woman gets death with hot lead being poured down her throat, death by burning. But that's only her. The Torah says this is done to her. So that implies it's not done to the man who had relations with her, and it's also not done to the false witnesses who try to falsely incriminate her with this guilt. So therefore, the Mishnah says, chutz, normally if false witnesses, they get whatever they were trying to impose on the person. Chutz, with the exception of zomimei bas kohen u'bala, if false witnesses come, and they claim that on November 4th at 10 in the morning, they saw a daughter of a Kohen who was married, have relations with some man other than her husband. And then other witnesses come and say about that first group, no, at 10 o'clock in the morning on November 4th, you were with us somewhere else, you couldn't have seen it. She'en makdimin l'osa misa. These false witnesses, the first group, does not get the death of burning. El misa cheres. They get the other death, they get the death of choking. They get the death that a regular married woman would get if she was engaged in illicit relations, or a man gets when he's engaged in illicit relations with a married woman. And then the Mishnah continues and says, so that's what that Mishnah was the context for our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is now saying that that's a case of plotting witnesses, of false witnesses that don't get what you would anticipate. Now there are other false witnesses. You don't do to them at all what they were plotting to do to their victim. You just give them lashes. But rather they just get 40 lashes. They get the 39 blows. Kate said, what's that example? And that's what our Mishnah says, the two examples. One, if they testify about a Kohen that he was the son of a divorced woman or a son of a woman who had chalitza, and it turns out that there's other sets of witnesses to place them elsewhere, then ain omer miasa zeb ben gusha ben chalitza, even if they who are testifying are kohanim, and we don't say that they become chalalim, that they have the status of a son of a divorced woman or the son of a woman who has chalitza tachtav in place of the person that they were trying to impose that status upon, elalokas arbaim, but rather they get 40 lashes. Yeah, question, David. So it's not exactly klal uprat, because klal uprat is in psukim. If you have a verse that says a general rule, and then another verse that says a prat, a detail of that rule. Here, these are rules of mishnayot. These are mishnah explaining the rules from the psukim. But yeah, there is a, in modern Hebrew, this would be a klal. All edim zomim get what they were trying to impose on their victim. And this is an exception to that klal. This is a prat. This is an exception to that rule. Correct. Generally, edim zomim get what they're trying to impose on their victim. One exception is when they're trying to impose on a bat kohen sreifa. They don't get sreifa. And even a more radical exception is the exception of our Mishnah. If they're trying to impose on a kohen a status of halal, or they're trying to impose on a person the status of having to run to an Ir Miklat, they don't get that those statuses. They get lashes. Yeah, question.
I'm sorry, maybe this is something to clarify. My understanding of reading the Mishnah is like, in our cases here, is you cannot do to the Etzomen the sin that you did, that sin that he wanted to create, because you cannot do it to him. But this is not the case.
We're about to see why. Now we'll see. Ask the Gemara. We're on the bottom here of Daf Beis Amud Aleph. Mina hani mili. How do we know this? That Edom Zomim that are trying to claim that a Kohen is really a Halal, and it turns out that they're Edom Zomim, they're plotting witnesses, that there are credibility issues with what they say. How do we know that they don't in fact become Halalim? So I'm Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi. Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi answered. Damar kra, because the pasuk says, "Vasisem lo, and you shall do to the false witness, kasher zamam lasos lachiv, as he plotted to do to his brother." The Torah says, "Vasisem lo, you shall do to him, lo, do to him, but not doing something that's also affecting and imposing a status on his children, velo lezaro, not to his children." So Gemara says, "One second, you could get away with it." Velif salu l'diday. So what? Why don't we just disqualify him? He's no longer able to say Birkat Kohanim. He doesn't get the first aliyah. He's a halal. And then his children leave them. And they can continue to be Kohanim. So answer the Gemara, that wouldn't be right either. Because Be'inam, we have to have Kasher Zamam Lasso, says he plotted to do to his friend. What he was plotting to do to his friend by saying that his friend is a halal, the friend's going to be a halal, the friend's children are going to be halalim. So you can't say he's going to be a halal, but not his kids, then he's not getting what he was plotting to do to his friend, Velekta. Then certainly, that's right. Bar Peda Omer, Bar Peda said, the reason why we can't make him a halal is based on a kal v'chomer. It's based on logic. And it would be like this. Uma mechalal eino mischalal. Just like a Kohen. A Kohen who marries a divorced woman, right? The source of the desecrating of kahuna status. He himself doesn't become a halal. If a Kohen marries a divorced woman, so once he divorces her, he goes back to being a Kohen. He doesn't become a halal. So therefore, a machalel himself, someone who actually desecrates the status of kahuna, he's desecrating it for his kids, but he himself doesn't lose his status. So habala chalel, someone who's only coming to take away the status, v'lo chilul, and he didn't actually accomplish the goal of taking away the status. Eino din shelo yischalel, certainly his kids should not, certainly he himself should not be a halal. Right? If someone actually takes away the status of his children by marrying a divorced woman and then having kids from her, he himself doesn't lose his status of a Kohen. So certainly someone who's only trying to take away the status of Kahuna from people, and he never succeeded because he was proven to be a false witness, certainly he shouldn't lose his status of Kahuna. That's the logic of Bar Peda. Maskeflor Ravina. Ravina said that's very poor logic, faulty logic. Im Kain, if you're going to use such an argument, Bitalta Toras Edom Zomim, then you would get rid of the whole law that witnesses who plot to do something to someone end up getting that which they were plotting to do. Because you could say like this, Umah sokel eino niskal, just like a man who actually causes stoning, right? True witnesses who get a guy stoned because they testified that he did idolatry and he was stoned. Well, once he's stoned, then other witnesses come and say these guys were false witnesses, so then it's too late because the Torah says Vasisam will do to him kasher zamam, as he was plotting to do to his friend. So if he already did it to the friend, let's say the court case was carried out, then he doesn't get punished anymore. Umas sokel. So you make this argument: someone who actually gets somebody stoned in a niskal, he doesn't get stoned, even though he's a false witness. Habaliskol. So someone who's only trying to get somebody stoned, velo sakal, he didn't succeed in getting getting somebody stoned. Eino din shelo yisakel, so certainly he shouldn't be stoned because he was only trying. Ella, we don't say that. That's against the pasuk. So machvarta, so that's a proof that this argument, this kal v'chomer, is rejected. Kiddushanin me'akar, we have to go back to the first reason. Why is it that witnesses who say that someone is a non-Kohen and then they are disproven, they don't become non-Kohanim? Not because they didn't do so much. If they didn't do so much, it certainly shouldn't be made into non-Kohanim. The reason why is because of the pasuk. The pasuk says, "Va'asisim lo, and you shall do to him kasher zamam, as he plotted." You can only do to him. You can't do to his children. To make him into a non-Kohen would impact his children. That's why he can't become a non-Kohen, and therefore he gets lashes. What was example number two of false witnesses who get proven as false witnesses, but they do not get that which they were trying to impose on their poor victim, but rather they get lashes? The witnesses who testify that somebody needs to go to a city of refuge because he killed by mistake. So the Mishnah said, "Me idin anu biish ploni." Two witnesses who say we testify about a certain man, shu chayiv galus, that he has to run to a city of refuge, and it turns out they're lying because of the second set of witnesses that we do accept. Therefore, they get lashes. Asks the Gemara, "Mina ani mili? How do we know this? That witnesses, false witnesses, don't run themselves to a city of refuge?" Amar Ish Lakish. Ish Lakish answered, "It's Amar Kra. It's a pasuk about a man who kills by mistake." Hu yanus el achas harim, he shall flee. He should run away. Who? He should run away to one of the cities that I will set aside. Who? He runs away for lo's omen, but not others, not the false witnesses. Rabbi Yochanan says, similar to Bar Peda, I think the reason why the false witnesses don't run away is not, and rather they get lashes, is not because of the pasuk that excludes them, but it's logic. Kal v'chomer. Because consider he, if he would do what he did on purpose, let's say he would kill on purpose. Enogola, he doesn't have the option of running to a city of refuge. Running to a city of refuge is only if somebody kills by mistake. So, hein, so they, shalo asu maisa, they didn't even do an act. The maisa, they didn't do an act on purpose. They just spoke. So even though it was bimezi, even though it was on purpose, but they didn't even do an act, so certainly they shouldn't be able to go into a city of refuge. So the Gemara says that's not a good argument. Actually, that very difference, that they didn't do an act, they just spoke, is a reason why they should go to a city of refuge. And I'll tell you like this. This is the explanation. If he kills somebody on purpose, lo ligli, he doesn't have the option of going to a city of refuge. Because he did a terrible sin. He killed somebody on purpose. So he killed somebody on purpose. Hashem's strict with him. He killed somebody on purpose. So he shouldn't have any way out. He shouldn't have any way to get atonement. He killed somebody on purpose. So he can't go to a city of refuge. But Angelo, but they who just said words. Yes, the words were on purpose, but they just said words. So it's just words. It's less of an act. Less of an act should have atonement. So Nami Liklu, they should have the option of going to a city of refuge. That they should get atonement. So this logic is not a good piece of logic. So if we don't have logic, what do we have again? A pasuk. So why do the witnesses who say falsely that a man committed an act that requires him to go to a city of refuge, they don't go to a city of refuge? It's the word. The word said who? He goes to a city of refuge. He and not the witnesses. Ela machvarta. So again, this is a proof. Kidereish lakish, like the law of Reish Lakish.
We also say that we will do to them what we enforce on the accused.
With these two exceptions. That's right. We normally do to the witnesses what they are trying to do to the accused, except for the exceptions of running to a city of refuge or being a non-Kohen, because you have to do to them, not to do to their kids. That's why you can't take away their Kohen status. And to the city of refuge, the Torah says about a city of refuge, he runs there, but not anybody else. The extra word of he running there is to say only him, but not others. Who are those excluded? These false witnesses.
I don't have any examples. There aren't many other sins where the pasuk says who or something, yet they would be zonim.
Apparently not. Apparently not. We'll see. Guess not.
Who's running to the city of refuge?
He is running to the city of refuge. Who? Right. Who? Him. Not anybody else.
So first? Is that what you're trying to do?
Yes, and what's on second?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't know who's on third. Yes.
Who's running to the city of refuge?
That may be the case.
Okay.
That's right. Nothing can be done to the false witnesses.
Only I can give
nothing is done to
even
it. Nothing. That we'll see later in the parak. Exactly. Yes. Yes. Okay, so going back to the Mishnah. Again, the Mishnah says that sometimes the false witnesses don't get what they were trying to impose. They get lashes. The two examples are false witnesses falsely accusing someone of not being a Kohen, or false witnesses who falsely accuse someone of killing by mistake. Amar Ula. Ula said, Remez leidim zom min haTorah minayin. What's a hint from the Torah to the idea of false witnesses? The Gemara says, oh, welcome back. Thank you. So the Gemara says,
you came on the right time for Makot.
No. So the Gemara asks, Remez leidim zomim, a hint to false witnesses. You don't need a hint. V'haktiv, it's an explicit verse. V'asisim lo, and do to him, kasher zamam, as he was plotting to do to his friend. So the Gemara says like this, Ella, our point is, Remez, what's a hint? To really address Gavriel's question, Remez, what's a hint? Leidim zomim to false witnesses, shalokin min haTorah minayin, that sometimes they don't get what they were trying to impose, but instead they get lashes. So the answer is like this. Answers Ula, Dichtiv, the pasuk says, Vitztiku es hatzadik, the court should acquit the person who's really innocent, v'yashira sarasha, and they should convict the one who's guilty. Vayan bin akosa rasha. Then sometimes the wicked one is to be hit. So the Gemara asks, we should ask, Mishum vitztikwa satzadik v'yashira sarasha. Vayan bin akosa rasha. Is it true that any time somebody who's innocent is acquitted, and anyone who's guilty is convicted, there is lashes? It's not always so. So the Torah shouldn't say that any time there's an innocent and a guilty, there's lashes. So it's not always so. Ella, so rather the point of the pasuk is to say the following. It's not talking about witnesses, and it's not talking about judges. It's talking about witnesses. Eidim sher shiu es hatzadik. If witnesses are falsely convicting someone who's really innocent, v'asu eidim acherim, and then other witnesses come, v'itztiku es hatzadik, and they bring back the man who's being falsely accused, and they acquit the one who's truly innocent, z'meikara, who was really innocent, v'shavinu lahani rishayim, and they make these other witnesses into wicked ones. V'ayam v'nakosa rasha, hit the wicked one, they get lashes. That's the pasuk. So Gemara says, typically, why don't you need to have this whole pasuk of re-understanding, v'yitzdiku es hatzadik, v'yirshu es harasha, that it's referring to the witnesses, the second set of witnesses that make the tzadik really righteous, that make the rasha really rasha, and they should hit the rasha. Why do you have to read the pasuk like this? For typically, it's just a simple law. Who gets lashes? People who violate prohibitions, and there's a prohibition. Don't be a false witness. The typically, because, lo san evreacha et shaker, don't be a false witness. Answer the Gemara, when do you get lashes? When it's a prohibition that has an act. Words, even though some people find this difficult, saying words is not an action. This is a prohibition against words. Don't falsely testify. That's no act. We have a rule that any prohibition that doesn't have an act, there is no lashes. So that's why it can't be the words from just the pasuk, lo san evri acha. Had to be another pasuk, v'yitztiku es hatzadik, v'yirshu es harasha, v'ya imbin hakos harasha. Tana Rabbanu learned by our sages in a braisa, arba'a dvarim ne'amru be'edim zomim. There are four cases where you have false witnesses that don't get what they're trying to impose on their friend, but rather they get lashes. Number one, Einasim ben Grusha ben Chalutza. You couldn't make false witnesses into Chalalim, into non-Kohanim, because that would impact their children. Two, Ein Golan L'Arei Miklat. They do not get run to a city of refuge, because the Torah says he goes to a city of refuge, not anybody else. Number three, let's say they falsely testify that Reuven's ox gored Yaakov to death. And it turns out it's not true. Reuven's ox didn't do it. Other witnesses come. You couldn't have seen that. So, normally when an ox kill someone, there's a payment of an atonement payment, a kofar payment. The owner of the ox has to pay money to get atonement, but they would not have to pay this money. And four, if einim karim be'evet ivri, if they testify that somebody stole and he doesn't have, and that money person doesn't have money to repay, so he's going to be sold as a slave, and it turns out that they are testifying falsely, they do not get sold as Jewish slaves. Mishum Rebbe Akiva Amr, in the name of Rebbe Akiva, they added a fifth. If they testify that somebody owes money and they were convicted, and another set of witnesses come and say, no, you couldn't have said that, you couldn't know that, you were with us at that time, and the court says, okay, you now have to pay the money. If they run away from the court and they run into another court before they actually pay and they admit that they were false witnesses, then they don't have to pay anymore, because according to Rabbi Akiva, the penalty on false witnesses is a knas, it's a fine, and there's a general rule, moda b'knas pater. If somebody admits himself to the fine, he does not need to pay. Okay, so now explaining the braisa. The first law, einasin ben gusha ben chalutza, false witnesses who are saying that someone is a halal, they themselves don't become chalalim, kidamar. And that's what we talked about on the earlier side of the Amud.
They get lashes.
Okay, yeah, but they don't get what they were trying to do. They don't get kasher zaman.
So they expanded.
That's point number one. Now, point number two, in Golan Lari Miklat, they would not go to a city of refuge, kidamar, based on the pasuk of who he goes, not anybody else. Now, point number three, Ein Meshalmanes HaKofer, if they testified that an ox killed somebody, they don't have to pay. Kasavi, this is based on the idea that Kufra Kapara, that the payment of Kofer is an atonement for the owner of the ox. Vahani Lavne Kapara Ninu, these are not people that can get atonement, because their ox actually didn't kill, so they don't get atonement, they don't need atonement. So now the Gemara says, Mantana Kufra Kapara, who's the opinion that the payment of kofar is just a way to get atonement? So Amar Rav Chizda said, Rabbi Yishmael, Benosh, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, he. That's the view of Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. That's not the time. In a braisa, the verse says that if the owner of an ox, if a man has an ox and his ox kills somebody, so the owner has to pay. Im kofar yushas alav, if an atonement is placed on him, v'nasan pidyon nafsho, and he shall pay a redemption of his life. How much money is it? So according to the first opinion, Dmei Nizak, he pays the value of the man who was killed. However, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh, Rabbi Yochanan Broka, Omer, Dmei Mazik, he pays the value of himself, how much he's worth. So my love, welcome if so this is the argument, Mar Sava Kufra Mamona. One holds that this payment is a monetary payment. It's reparation. It's to pay for having caused the death of a life. It's damages. Umar Sarva, the other opinion, who says, no, we don't even look at the value of the victim. We look at the value of the owner of the ox. So kufra kapara, because this is a payment to gain atonement. Amar Rav Papa said, lo, that's not necessarily the argument. So kuli amar kufra kapara. Maybe everybody agrees that the payment of the man who owns an ox is a way to get atonement. Just the question is, how do you assess that payment? Ma'ar Savar b'de Nizik Shayminan. One says it's the value of the one who was killed. Umar Savar b'de Mazik Shayminan. And one says it's the value of the one who owns the ox that kills. But everybody agrees that the payment itself is just to get atonement. Okay, so either everybody agrees that it's to get atonement, or one opinion believes that it's to get atonement. But if it's to get atonement, it wouldn't make sense to put it on anybody else who didn't actually do this crime. Because they don't need atonement. They don't need a kapara for having killed. They didn't kill. It's true, but you know, it's just not applicable to them. Kapara is only the person who does something wrong and needs a kapara. He gets a kapara. But somebody else didn't do that sin, can't get that kapara, can't get that atonement. Lashes, correct. So now the Gemara says, going into the law of kofar. My time, I drabbanan. What's the reasoning of the rabbis who say that it's the value of the victim? So nemar hashasa lamata. It's based on words. It says, if a man causes a woman to lose her pregnancy, kasher yashita lav baal haisha, v'nemar hashasa lamata. And it says over here in regards to kofar, the word hashasa im kofar yushat alav. So ma'ala halam b'dini nizak, just like over there with a woman who loses her pregnancy, we're talking about paying the value of the victim. Afkan, so to the kofar here is the value of the victim b'dini nizak. And Rabbi Yishmael, why does he say it's the value of the one who owns the ox that gets paid? Because he'll say, because the verse says v'nasan pidyon nafsho, and he shall give a redemption for his life, the one who owns the ox. And the Rabbanan, they'll tell you, And you're right, Pidyon Nafsho Ksiv, it does say the redemption of his life. Miu Kishai Minam, but how do we assess that value? What is the amount that he pays? But in Isaac Shaiminan, he pays the amount of the life of the one who was damaged. Then the Braita taught another law, where the fourth law, where the you can't do to the witnesses what they were trying to do. Einim Karim Bevet Ivri. If they were trying to make someone have to be sold as a Jewish slave, they don't get sold as Jewish slaves. Savar Rav Amnuna Lamei Ma, Rav Amnuna thought to say, Hani Mili, this is true. Heichad Islei Lididei, when they themselves have plenty of money. So since they have money, so they shouldn't be sold as slaves. Let them just pay off what they were saying that guy owed. Tamigu Diyulon is Davin. If he would have had money, he wouldn't have been sold. Inunami Lom is Davin. I'm sorry, where the man that they're talking about has money. So since the man that they're talking about has money, so he wouldn't have been sold because he has money, so therefore they also are not sold. But if the man they're talking about doesn't have money, even though they do have money, they would be sold. That's the view of Rav Hamnuna. So Rava disagrees. Rava says, so the Gemara says, why sell them? Why can't they say, if you would have had the money, would you have been sold? So no. Ananami, so us too, lo mizdavnina, we shouldn't be sold since we do have the money. Elasava Rav Amnuna Lamemar, so Rav Amnuna thought to say like this, Hani Mili, when is this law that they don't get sold? Hecha de Islay, when there's money around. Olodideu, either he has the money, Olodidhu, or they have the money. Avalecha de Lesley, Olodidev, Olodidhu, but if they say somebody stole, and that guy doesn't have any money, and they don't have any money, and it turns out that they lied, Mistavi, then they do get sold as slaves. Amale Rava, Rava said to him, no, it's a pasuk. The pasuk says, Vinimkar b'gneva toa marachmana, and the man shall be sold with his theft, bignevato, with his theft, the lobismamo, but not with his plotting to put the sin of theft on somebody else. Finally, Rabbi Akiva says, if Edom Zomim are convicted, but then they run before they actually carry out their punishment, and they go to another court and they admit on their own, they tell that court that they were convicted, the court didn't know it from any other source, they don't have to pay. My time to Rabbi Akiva, what's the reason Rabbi Akiva? Kasava, Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion, Knasahu, when Hashem says that the witnesses, it's done to them what they were plotting to do, that's a fine. And Knas Eino Mishalim Al Pi Atzmo, a person never has to pay fines if he's the reason why the court knows about it. Amar Rabba, Rabba said, what's the proof that it's a fine? Teda? Shavela Wasu Maisa. They didn't even do an act, they just said words. And nevertheless, Neharug, and they could be killed, Mishalim, or they can pay. Clearly, it's a fine in excess of what is normal to expect.